Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We're your hosts, Ken Seymour, Richard Geiger, the musical duo. Well, wait. The musical critical duo.
Musical critical thinking duo. There we go.
Better, closer, a little closer. We're excited. We got a fun one. We've been thinking about doing this for a while now, and we just kind of got around to it, mainly because why not?
Good bridge, let's call it, right? Bridge, because hopefully, next week we've got a good review coming.
Yes.
More details to come. But yes, there's space to be filled. And what do we like to talk about besides comics and other types of entertainment? We'd like to talk about music.
Yes, indeed.
We've talked about music.
Lots of times. We've done all sorts of top tens, and we've talked to people that have been makers of music, and we've kind of gone all over the place, but we're going to do something a little different now, something that I've kind of wanted to do because I am obsessive in this sort of way. You've seen us do this already with films and television. We go through it, we rate them, we decide what we want, and then we put them on a list of who's good and who's bad and who's ugly. We're going to do that with music now.
Yes. Now, the idea on this, of course, is over time, we will build ourselves a collection, a library of sorts, a playlist, if you will.
Indeed.
With a bunch of favorable songs and maybe some that aren't so favorable. But the idea is, as we communicate with our listeners about stuff, music that's not related to the list, movies, comic books, all types of stuff, that we can throw in another thing to add to this list and kind of build and collect and collaborate with ourselves, with each other over time to have a nice big playlist.
Absolutely. So while we may be calling it the definitive music list of all time or something to that effect, like the rating scale of rating scales, it's going to start with about 10 songs.
Correct. And I'm going to assume that if you are listening to our podcast, you've heard all of these songs except for one, and one of them you probably didn't know that you've heard before, but you've heard it before.
Yeah, well, I don't think we've mentioned all of the ones that we've got on this list. Many of them, for sure.
Yeah.
But and this is one of those things that the intention when we put this list together is not only see our tastes, compare your taste versus our taste, but if you're not completely familiar with the song, my goal is to have a link set up so that you'll be able to click on it and go straight to it. You won't have to look for it. You can just find the type of music you like, maybe just when you're searching around our website.
And, you know, coinciding with that would be learning a little bit more about us, because although, you know, a good portion of these songs we're going to have some similar ratings for, some of them we're not. And that kind of gives you an insight on some of our tastes. I'm sure we've already delivered that in terms of music swaps and some of that discussion already. But this kind of, you know, digs a little bit deeper.
Yeah, and you don't have to go looking for those original conversations. Like, I don't remember which one of those 6 years of conversations they talked about the one thing in.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have some examples right at your fingertips. All right. Well, let's start easy. There's no particular order to this because we all kind of rated them in different ways. So I'm just going to kind of go up the list, although we are going to start. We wanted a bedrock kind of example of the worst possible song that we could come up with, where we both agreed that this, if we had anything that could come close to a zero on a list, this would be it. And and we're going to start with that. And it's not exactly on its own that it's a bad song exactly. But you know how when you listen to something and then you keep listening to it and you listen to it some more, it can start to kind of lose its luster? Well, what happens when you do this? and you only listen to one small segment of the song over and over and over again. And then on top of it, you're only going to listen to it when you are impatiently waiting or angrily waiting or furiously waiting.
Yes, as it builds, right? It goes from one stage to the next to the next.
That's right. So we are going to start you with what we think is the worst song, I'm sorry to the creator of this, of all time. It's called Every Now and Then. What's the name of the artist, Richard?
Benedict Lambden.
That's correct. So, Mr. Lambden, I'm so sorry. I know you didn't intend this to be the worst song in the world. In fact, you were probably pretty excited when you wrote it. You said, this is a quality song. So much quality, in fact, that a large mega corporation purchased a portion of it to play as their hold music over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah. For decades.
Yeah, and if you've ever had to listen to this for any extended periods, you might initially think it's like, oh, that's not bad. After you've heard it for your 7,000th time, because it doesn't take long. You're going to hear the same section of song about 40 to 50 times in an average phone call.
And although we can't really play these songs, I suppose we could, but...
Eh.
Yeah.
No sense pushing getting a mark or anything.
Anyway. When you hear what we're saying, you have no idea what this song is. So this is your invitation to go search and play this song. And you guys may be like, what are they talking about, man? This song's fine. It's not great, but it's fine. Some of you will know.
For those of you in the know, we apologize if we trigger any PTSD or anything of the nature. We are so sorry. But let's start our rankings solid. Out of a scale of 100 is how we're going to rank all of these songs, just like we do with our films, although we're not going to, you know, take them to quite the nitpicky extent as a film. I'm going to give this a ranking of 2.
Out of 100.
Out of 100.
I did 1.
Yeah. This song is the bane of existence. I hate it. I hate it. When I hear it, it scars my soul. It is just not good.
It should be a 0, but once again, the creator might not be at fault. Plus, it is monetized. So if you guys listen to it on, a platform of some sort, they'll get their portion of a cent for a complete listen. So kudos to them for having something on a marketplace to make money off of.
Right. Now that we've established the seller, let's get to some other songs, some other fun stuff. It's been kind of dreary out recently. I feel like I would really like to go to the beach. And what's more American and beachy than the Beach Boys? Right?
Yes. They were... could you call them like America's kind of first, pop sensation boy band, you know?
I don't know if I call them that exactly, but they were certainly important.
They were the ones that for the longest time kind of topped the charts in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
And... a lot of the music for the Beach Boys is like the best. Some of the best parts about these songs is that they're like 2 minutes long.
Yes.
Three minutes long. Great, simple music, but the vocals, I think, stand out almost above all else because it's so melodic, rhythmic between everybody. I don't know. I holds a special place in my heart. We were discussing, our Super Gold days, and these were obviously highlights of the Super Gold playlist.
Yeah, it's just kind of, when you think of them, you think about, Brian Wilson, Mike Love, Bruce Johnston, Al Jardine. they dominated the 60s and a good chunk of the 70s. And then they still kept making music even into the 80s. And, so they were just kind of a staple piece of American pop culture. This particular song that we're going to include on our list is Surfin' USA off of the self-titled album that came out in 1963. Did you know that this song was not only written by Brian Wilson, but also by Chuck Berry?
I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of songs, well, just listen to the Beatles, right? A lot of influence, a lot of songwriting, a lot of play styles were modeled after Chuck Berry.
Yeah. Specifically, the structure was based on Chuck Berry's Sweet Little 16, according to Wilson himself. So just kind of a fun thing. But if you haven't heard the song, I'd be really surprised. I guess if you're of the younger age, maybe you haven't. I mean, I guess I don't really hear it as much as I used to. But,
you're right now, of course. A lot of our music that we listen to is streamed, and it's not from a radio station anymore. No. So we play what we want to play when we want to play it.
But even in, like, a lot of film and television, this used to be like a go-to song, and just not so much anymore.
Well, you know, the Beach Boys were on the Cocktail soundtrack, right?
Yep.
Kokomo, if I'm not mistaken. That was probably like their
80s,
last,
yeah,
their last kind of hit.
Now, do you remember they were also involved with a very popular sitcom at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Showed up.
I was going to mention that. Showed up on, in person.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, just fun stuff. They've got a soft spot in my heart. And, you know, this is one of their better songs, and it shows. What do you think? Surfin' USA, pop culture, iconic song, out of 100.
I'm going to guess, because we talked about this before and you wrote them down and I didn't write them down. I gave it in the 80s somewhere.
92 is what Richard
92,
said.
92, yes, that's what it was. Absolutely.
Well, that's okay. You know, if it's part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll, it has to be good. And that's why I gave it a 65, because it's okay. I was never a huge fan.
Fair enough. I will compare my Beach Boys enjoyment to my Tool enjoyment. I am a best of fan, and that's about as far as I'll go.
And hey, you know, if a band's good enough to have a best of, that's saying something.
Oh yeah, to fill a track list with 20 songs. Well, Beach Boys would be more than 20, I feel like. But
oh yeah,
but yes, yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, pretty interesting. We want to represent all types of music. So, I guess Benedict Lambden would be like easy listening. We go with the Beach Boys with some classic rock. We're going to hitch a train over to a country for our next entry. I've always been kind of picky on my country artists that I really like. It's harder for me to really get into country, so I tried to pick one that I really liked and inadvertently picked one I really liked and one that Richard doesn't care one way or the other about.
Okay, so hear me out on this. For the most part, my personal opinion is that most, if not all, but most country music is awful. So it's hard for me to say that I would like a country song or artist, period. I'm not saying it's impossible. And the older it gets, the I think the better it gets. You get to pre-80s of that country music. Now we're getting somewhere. You keep going back a little bit older. Now we're getting better. But you know, when you get to your Alabama and your
boom-bop-a-boom-bop-a.
Hey, Oak Ridge Boys, I can, you know what? I can listen to some Oak Ridge Boys, but they're kind of a hybrid gospel country.
A little bit.
Whole different ball game with those guys, though.
But I'm glad you recognize that. I didn't know if you would get that particular reference. But I wanted to go with who I think is one of the better current artists, because he's country, but he's got such a strong blues and rock influence that he's a crossover just juggernaut. He's managed to have duets with just a ton of people at this point. I mean, if you're going to duet with Justin Timberlake, that says something right there. And I'm talking about Chris Stapleton. I figured I'd, you know, go with his maybe most popular, or at least maybe most well-known song that he did, Tennessee Whiskey. That's off the Traveler album.
So here's the... Some songs have a connotation. We already talked about one already to it, to this fact that we gave a one and a two, respectively.
Right.
So when I hear this song, I think of Midwest wedding, because if you go anywhere in the Midwest and the wedding's in a barn, the wedding's at a place that's not a, you know, it's a Midwest thing in a barn in an outdoor area. They're going to play this song and everybody's going to be out dancing. Like, oh, it's the best song.
Well, until you got to the heaving portion, you weren't too far off.
Yeah. So, but I understand that it's a good popular, like Chris Stapleton's a very popular artist. I get it.
His vocal range is amazing. He can do runs like he was back in the 60s in a variety of different Motown environments. I mean, the dude is just stupidly talented.
Yeah, just chose the wrong medium, I think, is the problem.
I don't know, but Tennessee Whiskey's kind of awesome. He released the album in 2015, and just like one after the other, all sorts of different awards. Let me put it this way: Absolute Punk reviewed it and gave it a 9 out of 10 stars.
Very, very nice. Maybe if I listened to that album, I'd like other songs on there more, because I would not have heard them endlessly at, you know, locales all through the Midwest. And maybe that would change my attitude. But if you ever hear a Chris Stapleton song, it's that one. And there's another one. There's another one that gets played. It's him and somebody else, and it's like rock music, but it's like the worst low grade, simplest rock music you could ever imagine, with like the most basic of chords and drum beats to it. And I see people like jamming out to it. I'm like, what are you listening to? I'm pretty sure it's Christian. But he's playing with someone else. I
don't know. Oh, by the way, Absolute Punk, by the way, it's kind of like All Music and some other websites like IMDb, where a bunch of people can rate things. So it's actually a conglomerative rating. But, you know, who's going to go to that website and rate stuff? So I figured I'd clarify that it's not like a magazine or something like that. It's just kind of a grouping of music aficionados and fans and such that thought that was pretty awesome.
Highly respected.
Yeah.
Amongst his fellow artists.
But, you know, okay, so we'll go with my rating on that first, because I'm apparently somebody that's going to be stepping up to line dance or something in somebody's stables. But I got to give that a 91 out of 100.
I mean, that's fair. Also probably be doing the chicken dance too. So
did you already forget your rating?
Oh, sure. What is it?
It was no, like 87. Was... I mean, I was really surprised.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was in the 50s, I think.
52 is what you
rated.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That sounds about right.
That's kind of sad. All right, come on. So one of the founding pieces of rock and roll in country, Not Your Speed. Let's go to one of the other founding pieces and do a little R&B in the origins. We've talked a little bit about the movie The Blues Brothers before in the past, and you know, just my absolute love for that film, and I mean something based off an SNL skit, but underlying is a love for blues music. I mean, yeah, for the most part, it's two comedians trying to perform blues music and actually not doing terribly.
Succeeding, yeah.
Yeah, but they also, you get the chance to hear some of the legends that got to also perform on that particular soundtrack as well. And that's where we're going to go for this. I know it's one of your favorite songs.
Well, the other thing too is we were just mentioning a Midwest staple, and I feel like the Blues Brothers, obviously kind of based out of Chicago, is kind of that Midwest staple for the movie and the soundtrack and the love for the characters as well.
Right, right.
So that kind of fits into our neighborhood around here. I feel like a lot of white dudes are around our age and a little older and younger. If you live in the Midwest, you know that movie and you've watched it and you appreciate it. And it still is. Gosh, how old is that movie? Was that 70s?
Came out in the late 70s, yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of those that kind of, it ages, but it ages well. You know?
It ages really well. And it's so important, too. If it wasn't for that, my love for the blues wouldn't have happened. I don't know. It might still have happened. I might have gotten exposed to it in some other way, but that got me exposed to actual blues early. And then I got to really enjoy it for a longer period of time. And, you know, one of the individuals that was able to do one of his songs for the soundtrack and is featured in the film is Cab Calloway. And Cab Calloway, man, that guy had style.
Yeah, I feel like my appreciation for all things news, jazz, and blues came from a radio station that I could access. There was an NPR station. We could only get a couple of radio stations, and it was pop music or light music.
Right.
And then like 70 country music stations. So really it was, you know, pop music or light music. And there was it was 88.1, probably still exists, NPR, news, jazz, and blues. So, when it was working appropriately and you could pick it up on the stereo, you always got a good taste of something that wasn't, you know, hair bands or Mariah Carey or
right.
You know, whatever. So, the I don't watch this movie or haven't watched this movie nearly as much as you have, but it is one of those things that when I would flip through, you know, stations and the movie was on, I would always put it on because I knew it was good. And I loved the scene. I loved the scene when they were in like the little theater and getting together and they did the Minnie the Moocher song.
Now,
that was like one of my favorite parts.
Now here's the question. Now, I mean, obviously you get to see that he's meant to, the way he performs often in front of a big band, but did you know that he had this song that he created? It was for a Betty Boop cartoon.
A Betty Boop cartoon?
Called Minnie the Moocher.
Interesting.
Back in 1931, it was the first single record by an African-American to sell 1 million copies.
And that was Minnie the Moocher.
That was Minnie the Moocher,
for Betty Boop. Interesting. Was Betty Boop on one of our reviews of TV shows?
No, she's not based off of a comic strip or a comic book.
Interesting. Well, yeah. There you go. We picked a winner then.
Yeah. This is really a lot of fun. It's got so much style, so much class. It's just awesome. We both had it at the same rating. We gave it an 85 out of 100. This is something every time I hear it, I just smile.
Yeah, it's got that nice, it's like there's change of pace through it. And I feel like you can hear it when you play the soundtrack. But if it's played in a bar and it's late enough at night and people have been drinking or people just are having a good time, you're going to sing along with it at the appropriate parts, yeah. Right? Like it is a sing-along song, I feel like.
Oh, most certainly. He couldn't go anywhere without people trying to yell parts of the song at him.
Absolutely.
Talking about yelling things loudly and possibly in an inebriated state, that brings us to our next entry on our inaugural list. There was a small period of time in the 70s, 80s range where there was a, what would we call it, hair metal band was popular?
Hair metal, yes. There was a lot of hair metal bands, right? That was the shift. You saw a lot of metal in general becoming more popular, but you saw a lot more like synthesizers, and you saw a lot more of the poppy stuff. And the shift had been going towards the poppy stuff, but then the metal and rock was really kind of, taking shape, if you will. The non-traditional rock, if you will.
Well, the next individual on our list falls into that kind of non-traditional side of things. Pardon me. And they were a group of individuals by the name of Quiet Riot. They released a song called Come On, Feel the Noise that was very popular, and that came out in the 80s. Funny enough, it was actually a cover of a Slade song by the same name.
But made popular by Dee Snider and the Boys. fun fact, which has nothing to do with anything and is pointless, but we were driving down the road in California, and we came to a stoplight, and Dee Snider pulled up next to us, and he had like a purple muscle car that he was driving around, and then he pulled in to go to like the grocery store.
That's pretty funny. While I think that's cool, don't get confused. Dee Snider was not in Quiet Riot. Twisted Sister.
Twisted Sister. Yeah, my bad.
It's easy to get them confused because a lot of the hair bands kind of had a very similar feel.
They all blend together.
Yes, they do. But the original members of Quiet Riot was Rudy Sarzo, Alex Grossi, Jizzy Pearl, and Johnny Kelly.
And what are those guys up to now?
We're not going to get into that. I remember listening to this, and it's like the one song by them that I really enjoyed. And it's like, they can make decent music. Not like I want to go out and hear it and see them in concert, but like if it comes on, it's like, yeah, this is nice. This is fun. So, yeah, that's like a for an almost headbanger, a 70 out of 100 for me.
I think I was in a similar range.
You were 73 out of 100.
Yeah, there was a band, a local band, that tours through Bloomington.
Yeah.
And they do a whole bunch of hair metal covers. Hairbangers Ball.
Yep.
That song is definitely a staple in their rotation.
Yeah, they're pretty good from what I understand. It's a fun night if you get to listen to them. But again, you know, for me and Richard, we have eclectic tastes, and we didn't just listen to rock and roll and heavy metal. We like to put a little dollop of rap in there too. I know.
More so as we got a little older, I feel like.
Yeah.
Right?
And, you know, the early stages of rap, it was kind of different than as it progressed. And the next song on our list, I remember hearing several of the tracks off of this album and just being blown away by how different it was than other rap artists of the time. And finding a way to be able to mix being funny with just being hard at the same time. It's like, how do you do both of those things and be very, very, very white at the same time?
Well, one, you've got to have talent.
Right.
Right. So that's part of it. Talent overcomes a lot of things. And the thing with that talent, they reached a lot of audiences. They came at the right time, I feel like, too, because although they were primarily hip hop, their live performances featured drum kits, guitars, bass guitar. So like,
right,
there was a rock element to it. Although this song isn't off of Licensed Ill, that was the one that kind of, I don't know, introduced that was huge. You know, growing up, I had my own taste in music, but my sister had that CD. And then when she wasn't home, I'd sneak in and I'd grab that CD and listen to it just because I wanted to hear what was so cool about it. Side note, she also had Dave Matthews Band, and I never listened to that album ever. So,
well, License Still wasn't too bad. But that wasn't the one that just made me kind of go, okay, these guys, not only are they good, they are legendary.
Correct. This album, gosh, it was when media became much more available. You know, TV, radio, CDs, it was very attainable to hear it. May have gotten overplayed a bit, but... not in a bad way.
It's going to happen. But like Ill Communication was maybe where everybody kind of jumped on this. And this was the one we're going to talk about was on Hello Nasty, which was the follow-up album after that one. We're talking about Intergalactic, being able to kind of show your dorky love of sci-fi and that sort of a thing while rapping at the same time. It's so good.
The video for it's fun. The song is fun. You have the appropriate amount of like synthesized sound, synthesized voices, right? Like that's one of that's the hook, right? It's I don't know. It's an awesome song.
Yes. And it's not even something that's easy to really explain. You just kind of have to hear it. And that's kind of what we're hoping that you'll do with this list, is if you aren't familiar with the song, that you'll go listen to it. Or even if you are familiar, listen to it again and just enjoy it. I mean, we're not going to get any more traditional Beastie Boys anymore because, you know, they're not all with us anymore. MCA died. And, we've got what we've got to enjoy, and they gave us some great stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's my favorite Beastie Boys song, but it's one of the top.
And that gets us both on the same page again as one of the better scoring ones at a 91 out of 100. Yeah, pretty solid. And so I figure we should go from something that's this good to something that is just so bad, or at least I think is so bad. Apparently we're kind of split on this one. But I remember in the 80s and then the 90s where there were bands that I just absolutely loathed. Now, the funny thing about this particular band is while I hated the band, the lead singer actually did some acting in Highlander on TV. It's like, well, for that, he was fine. But I didn't want to hear him sing. It was not a good thing for me. We're going to be talking about an English pop rock band formed in Birmingham, England in 1984. The former beat band bassist, David Steele. Sorry, I've always wanted to be one of those disc jockeys that just kind of go over that. I've got that urge. But they're called the Fine Young Cannibals. You got any memories of these guys back in the day?
Well, I just remember that they were... Now, once again, I'll go over, like, the radio station that we had to listen to was just all pop. So, of course, I heard when they got hot, and they got played a lot.
Yes.
And although you may think of 80s pop hits that aren't from this band, I feel like when their songs come on, that, to me, I sing along with them as that round of the 80s songs, and they don't bug me. I wouldn't go searching for them. I wouldn't, you know, skip past this, but I don't really have an issue with it.
They're an example for me of something that when it comes on, I sing along with it in the angry way. It's like, she drives me crazy. Shut it off.
Or... you know, you could change the lyrics to it. I love this song.
No, not going to happen.
But when you hear it, you change your voice and you sing it.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yes. Because it's
iconic.
So bad that it's good.
It didn't quite hit that turn. It stopped just short. It's so bad. It's still bad. Oh, God, it's bad.
I feel like if this same artist made songs now, it would not go over well.
No,
it just kind of fit a certain niche in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it didn't get... It's not like they were immensely popular, right?
They had two big songs, basically.
Two-hit wonder, right? Yeah. Two albums, maybe, and that's about all anybody heard of them.
Yeah. So... For the song, She Drives Me Crazy, it does drive me crazy, and that's why it gets a 30 out of 100. Richard's a little nicer.
I gave it, it's in the 60s, right?
68 out of 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't mind it so much. I will, if somebody changes specifically to that song in my car, I will boot them out Sparta style while we're still moving along the road.
Duly noted. Change it to that song. Okay.
In a similar vein, in the sense that it's kind of campy in terms of the song, we're going to move on to a little bit of kind of punk rock, almost. Not. I don't know if I really call it punk rock. They can go punk sometimes, but this really wasn't punk.
Yeah, what would you call it, like mainstream rock, mainstream metal?
Maybe.
Like
crossover of some kind.
A fusion of some styles.
But very popular band that originally came out in 1984. The band's called The Offspring. Now, if you look at Wikipedia, they call it an American rock band. That's fair, but if you look at the actual genre list, it goes punk, skate punk, pop punk, melodic punk, hardcore punk, and then alternative rock. I think that's pushing it a little bit.
Well, maybe when they hit their stride, some of the punk elements remain for sure. But more of the rock stuff.
You suggested this song, which was... on the album Americana. I will eventually pick a Offspring song that will be off of a different album that is one of my favorite, just if you're kind of mad, songs to play, especially
yeah,
if you're driving. But we'll get back to that one. We chose Pretty Fly for a White Guy, and it's hard not to laugh at that song.
Yeah, so it's one of those songs that, you know, like some of the other ones we talked about, you know, maybe it got overplayed a bit because it was in that same time frame where media, like MTV, radio station, everything was a little bit more attainable. There's a lot more of that stuff around. I mean, gosh, for me, this was, you know, college days, so I didn't have cable TV until I got to school, so I was able to see more videos. Of course, this one, just once it became popular, it just got played and played and played.
Yeah, don't pay no mind.
I wasn't under 18, so let me do it anytime.
That's right. It's that kind of song. If you hear it, the lyrics are going to get stuck in your head.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, not in a bad way.
No.
This is like the catchy 80s tunes,
yep.
Except it was a late 90s tune.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing, just different vibe.
Good enough that it got parodied by Weird Al. So, I mean, it's got to have something going for
yep.
it.
If you got the Weird Al treatment, then consider yourself elite tier.
Absolutely. So I give this one a 78 out of 100. Richard was a little kinder, giving it an 81 out of 100. Either way, that's a very enjoyable song. Going from something that's crafted to make you giggle and kind of not be all that, you know, something serious, and then we're going to go straight into serious territory. But maybe with the greatest... Maybe the greatest greatest jazz musician, jazz trumpeter of all time, Miles Davis.
Now, did you, they did a biopic, right?
Yes, they did. It was okay.
With Rhodey in it. And so you have seen it?
Yes. It's okay.
Wasn't it called Some Kind of Blue? Like, it didn't have a title. Wasn't that the name of the movie?
That sounds like it might be accurate. I've already forgotten about it. It was, like I said, it was okay.
Yeah, because they've done a lot of biopics, right, over time. And we've seen a lot of them be awesome.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that one didn't pan out.
Nah, it was missing something.
It seemed like he had an interesting, troubled life, but maybe he just wasn't the right subject matter. I mean, I don't know.
I've seen some historical documentaries done on him. I mean, the documentaries are more interesting to me than the biopic attempts.
Yeah, because you're taking liberties, right?
Right.
And
he was just amazingly talented, but he was a complicated guy. And that's a nice way of saying he was a bit of an asshole.
Hey, he knows what he wants, and he wants it.
Yeah.
When you're creating a 9-minute song, and to an extent it's scripted, but to an extent you're going off the feel of your bandmates, you want it to be right.
Yeah.
I get it, but I don't, but I do.
But Kind of Blue is an iconic album. Even people that are not fans of jazz often like that album. It is the gateway into jazz for a lot of people. And So What is the track that we chose, first track off the album, just because it sets the tone so well. And it's got this mellow vibe. If I've had a hard day, sometimes I'll just play that song because it zens me out.
Well, isn't the album, if you are a jazz artist, isn't this album like the mountaintop, like the tippy top?
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm generalizing, of course, but like this is the one that you liked, listened to, grew up with, heard, overanalyzed, and have in your collection for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that one, and for good reason, because this album does not have a bad track on it. And depending upon who you talk to, as much as we're going to rate this track pretty high, it may not be the highest rated track on the album, just because it's all so incredibly good.
Now, I will say this as a jazz non-enthusiast, but a person who appreciates jazz. I think some of my favorite songs on albums that are, you know, like metal, you know, some of my favorite metal bands, right, when they have horns in them, are my favorite songs on the album. It just lends a different sound, feel, attitude towards things.
Right.
Yeah,
just the fun thing about this, too, is he had so many live performances that there's actually multiple versions of this album, depending upon whether you're listening to the original or one of the live performance sets. You can get something different out of it each time you listen to it, and it's great. Yeah, for me, that was 85 out of 100 for that song.
I think I was in a similar range.
Absolutely. 83. Woohoo! All right. So we started with our absolute worst of the worst. We also wanted to start with one that we thought was cream of the crop, one of the best songs ever written that we both kind of agreed on in the same level, too. In the same way that it's really hard to have a song that's a zero, it's really hard to have a song that's 100. Because, I mean, literally it has to be perfect. It's a little easier because perfection is not a singular point. It's a kind of a more vague zone that you can be in with music. And so you can hit a perfect song. But we wanted to have something at least approach that to start our list. And we've talked about this band more times than we can count. We're not going to rehash a bunch of old stuff. But if you know us, you know we love our Metallica.
And let's be honest, Metallica might not even be one of our favorite bands. It just so happens they had a 3-album stretch, some would argue 4, some would say 5, of perfection.
Yeah.
Right? But I'll scrunch it down and do 3.
That's safe.
Just because that's accommodates more people.
Yeah. But and in the middle of that, they had just the absolute pinnacle piece of writing that was Master of Puppets. It was so good, it was even put in the most recent, as of this recording, season of Stranger Things, and featured in just a kick butt section of the story now, to a certain extent, when I hear this song, I think about that show just a little bit.
Oh.
It's super good. But, for me, you know, we've had this discussion. I like songs that have progression, that don't just have, we start it, here's our chorus, here's the refrain, back and forth. That can be fine. But I want to develop something. Take me on a journey. Tell me a story with not just the words, but with the way that you put the song together. Take me in a direction I might not expect. Change it to acoustic in the middle of a metal song. I love it.
Fantastic. Besides the fact that it's, now I know if people are listening to metal, they're like, well, there's other metal things that are heavier than that, man. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, fine, cool. But it's like one of those, just maybe an introduction, maybe a way to show people that metal can just be really, really good when it's really, really heavy if it's constructed correctly.
Right.
And, of course, played well, too.
Yeah.
Now, this was still Cliff Burton era.
Yeah.
So
barely.
But you know, the obviously one of the things that gets panned on Injustice for All is the mixing, right?
Right.
And I think you still get a good mix.
Yeah.
In this album, in this song.
It's just really well done. Of course, we're talking about Master of Puppets off of Master of Puppets. Just gorgeous. So well done. From a band that can show that they can not only create the absolute best music in the world, but also can create some of the absolute biggest trash. Also, depending upon what album you're listening to.
Yeah, you know, they hit a wall. They hit a tom is what happened. And continually hit that tom for about an hour and just spiraled downhill.
That was
not entirely true. Okay, that's not true.
It's a matter of taste.
It's true.
There are people that like that. I don't see how, but there are people that like that.
Okay, so I'll say this. Listen to Helmet. A lot of their songs have tom real heavy through it, and it's way better. That's its own thing.
That is definitely its own thing.
Do you happen to have the notes pulled up for this particular song? Because I'm curious as to the individual writing credits for this song. Simply because a lot of the songs tend to be, you know, Lars and James.
Right.
It's not always true. But they tended to get the majority of the writing credits. Throw in a Kirk every once in a while.
It's got all of them on this one.
Yeah. See, that's... I think that just goes to show you right there that the master album is very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And this song is just, it's so good. And now tell me, if you are in a store, the people listening to us as we talk about this, if you're a fan of this album and this song, and you go to a record album, the store, I know those don't really exist anymore, but you go to a store and you're sifting through vinyls and you're looking through posters on the wall and this song comes on, aren't you just like, hell yeah? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It, you would sing along with it. You'd be jamming out.
You'd
be looking around to see if everyone else was doing the same thing too. Like, are you hearing this? Like, it's on they have it. It's like, it's playing here. Like, it gives such enthusiasm.
Try and make the crunchy sounds that the guitars have with your mouth. Jong, 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 jong. It's like,
we'll have more from this album and other similar albums as our lists progress.
Yeah. We'll try not to focus too much on one individual band, but I'm sure we'll come back to them. But yeah. Richard rates this one a 98. I very similarly am a 97 on this one. Just absolutely love it. Hard to get better than this. We have our first 10. Dear listeners, how close did we get to what you like? Let us know. As always, you can comment on the website. You can go to any of the social media platforms that we use while they're still running. You know, whatever is going on. Who knows? Hard to tell these days. But... our plan is we'll have the occasional episode where we'll add a bunch of songs to the list. But so long as things go the way we want, we'll add one song per episode to the list. And this list will just grow and will be mammoth. And we'll have a bigger list than anybody. And we'll be the best. And we'll take over the world. I'm not sure how we get to that step, but that's where it is.
50 songs per year.
But until next time, keep listening to music, watch some films, maybe go out and see that interesting new MCU project piece that they just released, and we'll come back next time.